NPR.com/NPR.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lori. Coming up, we're going to hear Florida This Week from this past Friday night on WEDU-TV. We'll talk about state and local politics with some of the smartest people around, and then later we'll open up the phone lines and take your phone calls. While the show is on the air, you can always email your comments into the studio. Our address is dj@wmnf.org. Well, first, one listener comment from last Friday's program. Last Friday, we had on a Republican political strategist and media expert on. We were talking about the races here in Florida for governor, for U.S. Senate. After the show, here's what one listener had to say.
Rob, it's Gary. Man, the Republican strategist interview, that's the kind of stuff that you personally do that nobody else is doing, including Tom Hartman, etc. And I got to say, that guy sounded more honest and astute and for real than the Democratic strategist you had on the other day, which is kind of sad.
Well, there you have a listener comment that came in after last Friday's show. You're listening to WMNF in Tampa. We're going to hear Florida This Week, which is a program that airs originally Friday nights on WEDU-TV. It's a discussion about state and local politics. Let's listen to Florida This Week from this past Friday night. And as you hear the comments from our panel, you can always email the studio here at dj@wmnf.org with your comments. Coming up next, the question of who to select to be the next Supreme Court justice looms large in the Florida U.S. Senate race. A Fox News star campaigns for Ron DeSantis in the Florida governor's race. Florida's curious rule about write-in candidates strikes again. And an out-of-state billionaire is backing one of the Democrats running for governor. Political Insights next on Florida This Week.
WEDU Studios, this is Florida This Week. And now, moderator Rob Lori.
Welcome back. This week our panelists are William March is an independent political writer. George Kretikos is the mayor of Clearwater and a Republican. Layla Abdelaziz is the digital campaign manager at Fight for the Future and an independent. And Steve Contorno is a reporter for the Tampa Bay Times. Well, it's so great to have you here. Thank you for coming. Well, President Trump says he'll nominate his pick to be the new Supreme Court justice to replace Anthony Kennedy on Monday.
Trump promised during the campaign that he would nominate only pro-life justices to the Supreme Court, and therefore the Roe v. Wade decision would be overturned automatically. Before the Roe decision, 46 states banned abortion entirely or allowed abortions only in the case of rape, incest, or if the pregnancy endangered the life of the mother. Senator Bill Nelson said this week in Tampa that he expects to vote against President Trump's nominee. Nelson is facing a tough race for re-election against Governor Rick Scott, and Nelson is among the most vulnerable Democratic senators running for re-election this year. He's among the 10 Democratic senators running for re-election in states won by Trump in 2016. According to the Tampa Bay Times, Nelson was the first to voice his likely opposition to the president's nominee. Governor Scott accused Nelson of playing party line politics.
So, George, is it fair that Senator Nelson has already made up his mind?
I don't think that the senator has made up his mind, but I do object to anybody having a litmus test on a candidate. Even though I spent most of my career on the House side, we didn't have to deal with confirmations. But I think it's important for the senators to look at who is nominated, what their background is, what their court cases have been, where they have studied, what they have written, and keep that in mind because that's the basis. And then they have to keep in mind something that I always remind myself, and it goes back, it shows how old I am. President Eisenhower nominated Earl Warren to be the Supreme Court Chief Justice. Mm-hmm. And what happened?
He got a liberal.
He got a liberal when he was expecting a conservative.
And we should say that you worked up there for Congressman Bill Young.
For 36 years.
Yeah.
And it's a different environment now up there. I'd much rather be down here in Pinellas County and working in Clearwater than in D.C. But litmus tests, and I don't care what the subject matter is, I don't think that they're fair.
Layla, do you think that the president, I mean, the president did say during his campaign that he was going to nominate a pro-life judge. Do you think that anybody that the president nominates is going to be pro-life?
I don't think we can know that for certain. I mean, I'm sure that most Americans would agree that the politicization of the judicial branch is very troublesome, and I think no one wants to see that. But we also recently saw the Republican Party being the leader of politicizing the Supreme Court nominations and really taking one from President Obama. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see the same waves, the same sentiments from both parties emerging as this nomination comes up. I think it's concerning, but I think it's too soon to say that this is going to be about Roe versus Wade. We don't know that yet.
Wendy, what do you think? I mean, because women's groups, I think, pro-choice groups are up in arms. They're assuming, I think, that the president is going to nominate somebody who's likely to vote to try to overturn Roe v. Wade.
Yeah, and I think they're right. But to go back to Nelson, though, to give Bill Nelson his due, what he actually said was that he would vote against the nominee because of Trump's litmus test, Trump's anti-Roe litmus test. But yes, I think if I had to guess, if I had to predict, it would be that Trump will nominate the justice who is most antithetical to the pro-choice movement, if for no other reason because Trump loves culture wars. They fire up his base for him, like with the NFL players kneeling. He went out and initiated that fight, didn't have to, because he loves the culture war.
So, Steve, then this comes down to how do people in Florida feel about Roe v. Wade and pro-choice versus pro-life? Do they want Roe v. Wade overturned? Because Nelson is running for re-election. So that could become a big issue in his fight for re-election.
It'll become a big issue for him and as well for the candidates for governor, because likely, if there is a change at the Supreme Court level on how they rule on Roe v. Wade, it'll leave it up to the states to decide. And we have two candidates running for governor on the Republican side who have said they would sign a heartbeat bill, which basically says that life begins at a heartbeat, which can be as early as 7 weeks. Sometimes that's before women even, you know, can detect that they're pregnant. So those types of laws that are starting to pass in Republican states around the country, if they come to Florida, it's going to politicize the issue, and not just at the U.S. Senate level, but at the governor level and probably state house races as well.
And George, that raises a question. Who gets more fired up? Do the anti-abortion people get more fired up and come out to vote, or do the pro-choice people get more fired up and come out to vote?
I guess we'll find out on election day.
I guess so.
Yeah.
It's a tough year to make predictions.
Yeah. Steve, one thing that you pointed out was that the other day when the Republican candidates held their debate, they didn't really answer the question very directly whether or not they were in favor of having Roe v. Wade overturned.
Yeah, it was interesting. They were really pressed on it by Bret Baier during the debate, and he said, you know, you've supported a heartbeat bill. Does that mean that you want to see Roe v. Wade overturned? And they both just completely, deferred and talked around the question. And so I'd wonder if, you know, the heartbeat bill is almost a de facto ban on abortion. It's not quite that, but in practicality it is. But the idea of Roe v. Wade, there are a lot of moderate, conservative voters, right of center, especially in the suburban women category, who probably still identify with Roe v. Wade in a way where they won't want to see it overturned, but a heartbeat bill maybe might sound better to them.
Hey, Wendy, do you think that there's any chance that Bill Nelson changes his mind on this? Because he is in a state that voted for President Trump by 113,000 votes.
Well, he could change his mind, yes, but I think it would have to be in response to some sort of circumstance involving Trump's nominee, perhaps, you know, making clear that there's not been a litmus test. Interestingly, I have in the past read there are some pro-choice people who believe that overturning Roe v. Wade would be a good thing for their movement because it would force the battle down to the states and energize voters, a majority of whom in this country are in favor of some degree of abortion rights, mm-hmm. some degree, not maybe not full on abortion on demand at any moment, but but some degree of abortion rights.
But the states are a little dicey because we know that Republicans control most state governments around the country.
They do, and some pro-choice people see this as a way that might be ended.
Okay. Well, one of the Republican candidates for governor, East Coast Congressman Ron DeSantis, campaigned in Tampa on Monday along with Fox News TV star Sean Hannity. It was the second of three stops the duo made in a quick campaign swing through Florida. The others were in Pensacola and Fort Myers.
The Tampa Bay Times reports the Tampa event was a lot like a Donald Trump rally, with chants of lock her up, MAGA hats, boos for Nancy Pelosi, and loud applause for draining the swamp. DeSantis has been endorsed by Trump, and although he trailed by 17 points in a poll put out a month ago, DeSantis hopes his hard line on immigration and his attacks on Putnam for taking money from special interests will make him the Republican Party's candidate in the fall governor's race. DeSantis used the issue of immigration to attack his opponent during last week's first Republican debate.
Well, here's the thing. I think that the folks who come illegally, if they come with minors, they should be reunited with their families, but it should be in their home country. You should not come illegally. And when we had a chance in Florida to do E-Verify, which is the number one thing you can do to shut off the job spigot, it would raise wages, increase the rule of law, and be good for taxpayers. He twisted arms in the state Senate. He helped kill it behind the scenes.
That's rich for somebody who voted in an agricultural bill to give food stamps to illegal immigrants.
The primary election is August 28th.
Well, Steve, you were at that Sean Hannity event with Ron DeSantis in Tampa. What can you add? What was it like?
It was interesting because I have covered Trump events, and they're obviously much larger in scale, but this was like a mini Trump event. You had, you know, Sean Hannity, who clearly, you know, has the president's ear, rallying up the crowd and getting them. It was a pretty raucous crowd. You had a lot of Trump supporters there in Trump attire, and they were, you know, all the big hits were getting a laugh.
How much notice did people have to come out, and how big was the crowd?
I think just a few days. I got the alert for it when I was at the Republican summit right around the debate time that this was going to happen
on Friday.
Yeah, and it was, you know, this has been. That sort of capped the most important stretch in this race so far for Ron DeSantis, because he had the one bookend. You had a Trump endorsement, and then you had the debate. He gave a barnstorming speech at the summit that really rallied a lot of people, and then you had the Hannity event. And before that, I pointed out in the polls, he's behind. We'll see where he's at after the stretch.
And we still haven't seen a poll since that debate happened a week ago Thursday.
Not a good one. That was
1,000 people in Tampa. Is that a fair number?
I think that's about right.
That's a pretty big crowd.
It is for a quick turnaround like that. And you know, it's interesting though. At one point, about an hour in, Hannity turns and he sort of says, like, do you guys know this guy's background? And, you know, a bunch of people said, yeah, but there was a bunch of no's in there, too. So I think he's still a little bit of an unknown, even among, you know, the core Republican Trump supporters.
Any diversity in that crowd, or was it pretty much white male?
I would say white, older.
Uh-huh.
But there's this Bikers for Trump group that's been going around the state. They were there. They've been big Ron DeSantis fans. But it was largely, you know, the kind of crowd you expect to be available on a Monday afternoon.
All right. So, Wendy, do you think there's any chance that DeSantis could mount a serious challenge to Adam Putnam for the nomination?
I absolutely think there's a serious chance of it. It's not easy to predict. Like Layla said a minute ago, this is a very difficult political year to make predictions in, but he's clearly got emotion, he's got energy on his side, and I agree with what Steve said a couple of minutes ago, that one of the clearest signs, one of the best signs, will be the first reputable poll to come along after this series of events, the Trump endorsement, the debate in which DeSantis held his own, and the tour with Hannity. If a poll shows signs of movement for DeSantis after that, I think it could signal that Adam Putnam's got a problem.
All right. George, Adam Putnam has been working on this for years. He's got an organization in all 67 counties. He's campaigned everywhere in the state of Florida. Isn't it too late for Ron DeSantis to come along and challenge Putnam?
No, I don't think so at all. I think sometimes people get tired of a campaign going too long. And the very fact that Ron DeSantis is getting these stars to come into town to help energize his core group is going to be important. It's going to be a momentum shift, you know, possibly for him, even though most people right now are in the Putnam camp.
So, Layla, one of the big issues that DeSantis is beating Putnam up on is immigration. I haven't fact-checked this, so I don't know if it's fair to say that Putnam is soft on immigration. I think Putnam is probably pretty close to where DeSantis is, but DeSantis is saying there's a big difference between the two and beating Putnam up on the issue.
Well, I think what we clearly see from DeSantis is how charismatic he is and how bold he is. And he understands that he's going to have to ride that tide to really make himself a strong contender in this race. I think, you know, I don't really think either of them have a record to prove whether they're strong or weak on immigration. I don't think that they've been in positions to really define that issue area for themselves, but we'll see how it plays out in the campaign.
All right. Well, five state legislative districts will be decided by voters in the August primary and not in the general election in November. That's because of Florida's peculiar write-in loophole.
In the five races, there is no challenge from the other party, so whomever wins in August will go to the legislature. Florida law allows all voters, regardless of party affiliation, to vote in a legislative primary race if all the candidates are from a single party. But there's an exception that bars independents and members of the other party from voting. It's when there is a write-in candidate. The write-in loophole will affect two legislative races in South Florida. Here on Florida's West Coast, three races will be affected. House District 56 in DeSoto, Hardy, and Polk counties, where only Republicans will be able to vote in the primary between GOP candidates Melanie Bell and Jeff Mann. In Hillsborough County's House District 61, only Democrats will be able to vote in the primary between Democratic candidates Sharon Carter, Norman Harris, Diane Hart, and Karen Skyers. And the same is true in Hillsborough County's House District 62, where only Democrats will be able to vote in the primary between Democratic candidates Mike Alvarez, Chris Cano, and Susan Valdez.
So, Wendy, you've been covering this a long time. This is not the first time that write-in candidates have entered the race and then prevented people from the out party from voting in the primary.
And it won't be the last. The way this usually works is, if you have candidates of only one party filed, then the most partisan, usually the most ideologically extreme one of those, will put up, you know, convince his brother-in-law or his neighbor's gardener or somebody to file as a write-in. You don't have to live in the district if you're a write-in. You don't have to pay a filing fee. Your name doesn't go on the ballot. None of them has ever won. But the simple fact that he files those pieces of paper means that only members of the party can vote, and that benefits the one who's the most extreme ideologically. So, and a lot of times they're put-up jobs. Now, in the two races in Tampa, these don't look to me like that kind of put-up job. They look to me like places where people just filed as
write-ins. Did you talk to the write-in people by any chance?
Yes, I did. One of them is a perennial Democratic candidate who's filed to run for one seat after another, one House seat after another, even mayor. Jose Vasquez is his name. The other is an FSU student who says he didn't even know that he was keeping the primary closed, and he filed to get the experience for a future political career. Now, the point is that it's not real easy to see who among the other candidates benefits from having the closed primary in either of these races. Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's not an obvious put-up job in either of these cases, though most of the time in other races it is.
You know, it's funny to hear the debate on this because I've covered politics in several other states, and there's always something like this. And in Wisconsin, there were recall elections, and you had Democrats running as Republicans to force a primary so that it gave the other candidates some more time to run, and there were vice versa, those kind of shenanigans. And in Virginia, there were issues with slating, and you had to go to these really closed party meetings in order to slate the candidates that you wanted properly. So there's always like esoteric and archaic rules.
But Steve, it seems so unfair. I mean, it seems like, you know, because, you know, in some cases the Democrats are shut out from voting in these races, in other cases the Republicans are shut out from voting in these races, and yet these are going to be the elected officials from that area.
Yeah, I mean, it's, I guess, take it to Tallahassee.
George, what do you think?
I think a bigger problem here is our election laws. And maybe we need to take a look at how you qualify as a write-in candidate. Because they never win. And they do disrupt the system as legitimate as they may think they are. A lot of people will just do it for the publicity and just to get their name out for one reason or another. And it disenfranchises, you know, people from voting. So I would like to see our legislature, you know, maybe look at what you have to do when you qualify as a writing
candidate. I think most importantly, though, I mean, this is an undercovered issue all around throughout the country. But when you work on election cycles and when you've been involved in election cycles, I mean, that's exactly it. There are many groups of people and there are many election laws that disenfranchise fair elections across the board. We have closed primaries in Florida. Not many states have closed primaries. We, in general, have closed primaries. We have a law that prevents former felons from getting back their voting rights, and they're disenfranchised. I mean, there are so many layers to disenfranchisement that the system has built and passed and delivered. And so I appreciate when election years come around and we get to kind of dive into the nuances of these, because it can be hard to understand, I think, from the public's perspective of how rules and laws and procedures disenfranchise people, but really that comes to surface right now.
And George?
But I have a problem with open primaries, because as a candidate, especially in Florida where we're encouraging people to vote by mail, that raises the cost of an election for a candidate.
Let me jump
and
in.
Because you don't know whether to target your, you know, Republican voters if you're running as a Republican, or your Democratic voters if you're running as a Democrat. You've got to target everybody if you have an open primary. And I don't think that that's fair to the candidate.
We have a lot to look in at other nations about fair elections and the impact of financial contributions to elections. But just in general, I mean, like, more and more voters are not registering with either bipartisan, with either party, and the American populace is more and more disenchanted with the gridlock of bipartisan politics right now. It's not the reality of our electorate anymore, and it's worth taking a look at.
But you can't have an open primary. Just say on election day, you come up and say, I want to vote as a Republican, or I want to vote as a Democrat. I don't think that that's fair to the candidates.
A lot of people would disagree with that.
All right,
to be continued. Well, liberal billionaire Tom Steyer's Next Gen America has endorsed Tallahassee Mayor Andrew Gillum for governor and is putting $1 million into his campaign.
Next Gen is also providing 50 field organizers. Gillum has less personal wealth than the other four Democratic candidates. He's already had the endorsement of George Soros, another billionaire Democratic donor.
All right, Layla, Gillum's campaign is strong, but he's not in the top two positions in the polls. Does this endorsement and does this money help Gillum?
I think it definitely helps Gillum. You know, Gillum likes to position himself as the only non-millionaire in the race. In terms of the Republican slate, definitely corporations and just like the vast majority of the fact that Republicans have more power in this state means that more corporate dollars go to those campaigns by default. There's a lot of institutional and private money behind the other candidates. So I think this will be useful and it'll like drive Gillum's message forward to a lot of the electorate that has yet to hear it. But whether it'll impact, you know, his position in the race, it's not clear yet.
Well, $1 million does help a little bit.
And I'll tell you something else that might help him too, is that Next Gen has been on the ground in Florida for over a year. And they've also been working very closely with the Democratic Party and their ground game. And all of a sudden, a month before, you know, the primary, one of the, you know, foundational groups that's been helping get Democrats to register to vote is now behind one candidate.
What's the focus of Next Gen? Who are they trying to organize?
Mostly they're around climate issues.
Okay.
And so they're more trying to take issues that are important to voters and help get them involved in the issues that they care about.
Are they targeting millennials?
They've deeply organized in Florida's young coastline communities. I mean, for even far longer than the past year. They've been involved for maybe like the past 3 years that we've seen.
Right.
But I mean, and what you see with like Soros and Steyer's is that these billionaire independent political powerhouses are not as tied to the institutional Democratic Party. And there's a lot of infighting happening within the Florida Democratic Party right now about who the nominee should be. And these billionaires are not tied to that politics. They want the candidate that they believe will have a strong line on issues such as climate change, which is really, really, really one of the frontline issues in Florida right now.
All right. Before we go, what other news story should we be paying attention to? And George, let's start with you. Your other big story.
I think we need to pay attention in the primaries and coming up to the election on a state level regarding local home rule. As a city mayor, that is so important to us in what the legislature does to us in terms of unfunded mandates, even the school resource officer issue that we had after the Parkland situation. So I think we need to focus on home rule and the importance of local decisions.
So bring that question up at candidates' forums.
Yes.
All right, Steve, your other big story.
The Tampa Bay Rays are going to be unveiling some of their plans for their new ballpark in Ybor City, so it'll be interesting to see how that sort of jumpstarts the, you know, the campaign to get the team over to Tampa.
And they're promising a design that fits in with the spirit of the community.
A design that fits the spirit of the community, something that can be used 365 days a year, and they're also going to, for the first time, give some ideas about what it might cost.
So. All right, Layla, your other big story.
I guess I'll just shed light on the immigration debate happening in the country right now. And I think what's really missing from anyone's analysis of the question of how to solve the immigration problem is just reminding ourselves that really for the past century, the United States has been the geopolitical leader in the world. And we've taken responsibility for policing the world. We've taken responsibility for being the leaders of the economy. And part of a lot of that responsibility also means that it falls on us as a nation to pass equitable and fair and just immigration laws. And I don't think that we understand ourselves as a superpower when it comes to the immigration debate.
All right. Wendy, your other big story?
Well, I'm going to go with the Congressional District 15 race. It's turning into sort of a real battle royal on both sides. Three Democratic candidates, five Republican ones. To a degree, it's a Hillsborough versus Polk battle because those are the two main counties involved. It's a fairly strongly Republican-leaning district. It went for Trump by 12 points, but Democrats think they have a shot at it. This, by the way, I should say, is the seat that Dennis Ross of Lakeland is vacating as he retires. Democrats feel like they have a shot at it, and one way or another, it will be the first seriously contested House race representing part of Hillsborough County in years.
And Layla points out that there's a significant number of people of color and immigrants living in that district.
That's because the district was expanded to take in 2016 in the redistricting to take in more areas of East Hillsborough County that include a Muslim community, some migrant, agricultural worker communities.
All right.
People like that.
We'll pay attention to that. Well, thank you all for a great show.
That was Florida This Week from this past Friday night, and my guests were William March, whose voice we heard last there. He's an independent journalist. He writes stories, though, for the Tampa Bay Times. Layla Abdul Aziz was on there. She's an independent, a community activist. George Credigos is the mayor of Clearwater, and Steve Contorno is a staff reporter at the Tampa Bay Times. And several people emailed in during that show. Elizabeth writes regarding the question about abortion. She says, we can have private abortion for rich people and the coat hangers for poor people, or we can have some sort of Roe v. Wade. If life is sacred, we need no war, no death penalty, and no tormenting of sacred children, writes Elizabeth. And she goes on to say, with many Earth tribal people, including Jewish and Maori, individual soul life is considered to enter the fetus at the first kick or when the eyes form. That is 24 weeks, writes Elizabeth in Tampa. And then 352 writes regarding writing candidates, preventing people from the other party from being able to vote in an uncontested or election where the OI candidates are running in the primary. 352 writes, so the first write-in candidate is a career speed bump, and the second one has no clue what he's doing, and your guest doesn't see that they're both put-up jobs, writes 352. I would say, too, that if you have evidence that one of the write-in candidates is a put-up job, you should contact especially your local newspaper and let them know what evidence you have. I think that's really important if you've got that evidence. 813-239-9663 is our number here at WMNF on Radioactivity. Thanks to Frank Knox for being our phone producer today. I'm going to read a few of these news stories from this morning. An aide to a Thai Navy SEAL commander says four boys were brought out of that flooded cave in northern Thailand this morning, and the ongoing rescue operation is now over for the day. A total of eight of the 12 boys have now been brought out of the treacherous cave system by divers. And then President Trump announces his pick to replace retiring Supreme Court Justice Anthony Kennedy at 9 p.m. this evening. Trump told reporters that as of yesterday afternoon, he still had not narrowed his choices down to one candidate, but said, with his final four options, you cannot go wrong. Those options are believed to be federal appeals judges Brett Kavanaugh, Raymond Kethledge, Amy Coney Barrett, and Thomas Hardiman. So we'll find out at 9 o'clock tonight. And Sean Canaan is going to do an entire midpoint program on that topic, so stick around because that's coming up in the next hour. The Trump administration has until tomorrow to reunite young children who are separated at the border with their parents, but the American Civil Liberties Union said last night that the administration provided it with a list of 102 children under 5 years old, and that appears likely less than half will be reunited by the deadline tomorrow. The Justice Department plans to present a progress report today to a federal judge. And more than 100 people have been waiting for temporary housing for almost 2 weeks in North Florida since being displaced by a wildfire that burned through their tiny community in the Florida Panhandle. The wildfire was started by a state contractor. Displaced residents have been relying on the generosity of others in the East Point community for shelter and supplies. And again, we're going to take some phone calls, and we're going to talk about the items in the news. Our phone number is 813-239-9663. Volunteer groups from several U.S. states are stranded in Haiti after violent protests because of rising fuel prices. Those protests canceled flights and made roads unsafe in Haiti. Church groups in South Carolina, Florida, Georgia, and Alabama are among those who have not been able to leave, according to newspaper and television reports. And Starbucks says it will eliminate plastic straws from its stores by 2020, a nod to the growing push for businesses to be more environmentally friendly. The Seattle-based company said today it will instead use straws made from other materials and lids designed not to need straws. McDonald's also said it would switch to paper straws in the UK and Ireland by next year and test alternatives to plastic straws in some U.S. locations. Environmental activists are pressuring businesses to ditch plastic straws because they can end up in the ocean and hurt marine life. Local governments are also looking into the issue. Seattle's ban on single-use plastic straws and utensils and food service outlets recently took effect, and other cities are looking at similar local ordinances. Let's take some phone calls. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. Email address, dj@wmnf.org. And we're going to go to John in Port Richey. John, you're on. What would you like to comment about?
Oh, several things. Thanks, Rob. First of all, one of your guests on the show, I thought it was interesting that he seemed to be more concerned about the cost of the candidate than actual democracy. I found that interesting.
Yeah, that was the mayor of Clearwater said if you open up the primary to everybody, then you won't be able to send out mailings to everybody because you'll have to include both parties. Yeah, so he did say that.
Yeah, I didn't know who it was. I remember the gentleman, but I was like, really? Okay, I don't know. And something else I'd like to know because, you know, how many reporters have gone out and actually campaigned for a candidate? I don't know too many that have done that. But Sean Hannity's out there campaigning for this candidate, so how can he claim to his audience that he's really fair and balanced and not biased? I'm not sure how that works.
I can tell you that in most places, if you're a reporter and you go out and campaign for a candidate, you'll be fired or reprimanded. I'd say that's in most cases.
I would think so. But that goes back to Hannity being, what does he call himself, a entertainment reporter? I forget what he called him, where he's actually an opinionist, and he says he's a reporter, but then he says he's an opinion. I don't know. I'm confused about
Does he call himself an infotainment guy? Does he use that word?
What it was? I don't know. Last thing, and I'm going to be real quick, and this is something I've noticed, that a lot of people that are calling in about these refugees coming up from El Salvador and Guatemala, they don't seem to have very much empathy for these people that are coming over here. And it just made me think of that listening to Amy Goodman today with her stuff. And I think a lot of that comes from listening to the conservative radio, because they don't have a lot of empathy, and all they do is push fear and hate, and these people are illegal. It's just mind-boggling that they just don't have this empathy for these people. I'm not sure if they just not are aware of their situation because of what they listen to or what the situation is.
Well, the point that Amy's guest made today, that a lot of the drug cartel leaders are ex-military, and when they were in the military, they were funded and trained by the U.S. That was a very interesting point.
And that reminds one more point. You just reminded me of something else she made me think of. I was talking with a friend of mine who's very conservative, and he's like, you know, the history that they taught us in school, in the textbooks that we had, wasn't the real history that I learned later on, that they lied to me. And I think that's the same thing that's going on with Sean Hannity and these people, these talk show hosts. They're pushing a version of American history that doesn't tarnish America or America's image abroad. They won't talk about how we've created this situation, because that, to them, is anti-American. But thank you.
Hey, John, let me ask you a quick question. You've got a neighbor there in Port Richey who says that Sean Hannity is not a reporter. Your neighbor Jeff writes, that's why your caller is confused. So you've got one of your neighbors up there in Newport Richey, who just says that Sean Hannity is not a reporter. What would you say back to your neighbor? What would you say back?
I know he's not a reporter. I know he's an opinion person, and that's the issue. Every time I have an argument with my conservative friend, he thinks that he's a reporter, that he has this research team, that he goes out and does all this in-depth, you know, reporting to get all his information, his facts, and I keep trying to tell him, no, he's an opinion person. He doesn't have to worry about what he says. He doesn't have to worry about facts or all that stuff. So I don't know if that person's saying that I don't know that Hannity's a reporter. Is that what the email was referring to?
Yeah, the emailer was criticizing you, saying that you should know that Hannity is not a reporter.
Oh, I know that. I knew that for a long time. So
he
just misunderstands what I'm saying.
Should there be?
I was just pointing out that Hannity is not fair and balanced, and how can those people that listen to him believe that he's fair and balanced when he's going out there advertising or campaigning for somebody?
And, you know, I think you raised a really good point. So here he is, a guy who portrays himself as part of a news team, who's out there campaigning for a reporter. Should there be a disclaimer on Hannity? And what should that disclaimer say? I mean, if for Fox viewers who think that he presents the news, and it turns out that he is using his position to campaign for people who are in office. He certainly helped President Trump get elected.
Yeah.
So what should the disclaimer be? Should there be something, a scroll underneath Hannity every time he talks that says something about the contents of the show?
Well, speaking of disclaimer, I noticed that they've never said that opinions held by Sean Hannity are not those of the station, like I hear on some places. But I don't even know if a disclaimer would really do any good, because I think people that listen to Sean Hannity are just so enamored with him that it doesn't matter. You could put on the bottom of there that everything he's telling you is a lie. Don't believe it. They will still believe it because he just sounds that good and he's really good at marketing. So I don't know if a disclaimer would work, but maybe they should say something at the beginning that this is an opinion, not news, because I think a lot of conservatives don't understand the difference, because they call in and they talk to Daniel Ruth about, well, you're blah, blah, blah. And he's like, yeah, but I'm in the opinion part of the paper. I'm not in the investigative journalist part. There's a separation there. And I think a lot of conservatives don't quite grasp that concept, and I don't quite get it.
And you're not going to find Daniel Ruth campaigning for a candidate either. your neighbor Jeff in Port Richey says that Sean Hannity uses research to form his opinions. You think Sean Hannity uses what you and I would consider research?
Well, I think he uses research on stuff that he wants to right-wing conservative things that back him up. I don't think he uses credible sources. Really use a credible... matter of fact, when he does have somebody credible on there. I heard one guy who he said, oh, this guy was really great. I love this guy, and I've heard him on the show a couple of times, and he brought up the housing market crash. And this guy called him out on it and said, no, Hannity, that's not true. It was really it wasn't the Community Redevelopment Act signed by Carter like you keep pushing. All those banks that crashed, 90% of those were not even under that law. And he brought that up a couple of times. And then, like, the next time I listened to him, Sean Hannity's like, that guy's an idiot. He doesn't know what he's talking about. So if he finds something that contradicts what he believes, he's not going to believe it. He's going to go out and back up what he wants to say, and he's going to manipulate the information. He's only going to give you partial facts that back up his statement and leave out the rest of it that actually contradicts what he's saying. So his research, I would not call it research. I don't
know. All right. John, you've really riled up your neighbor, Jeff, because I must have 7 or 8 emails here from him. He's just all riled
up
because
of what... Ask him if he loves Sean Hannity.
Oh, he does love Sean Hannity. Yeah,
there you go. Does. See? Right. You can't
There's a lot of name-calling. I'm not going to repeat it, but there's a lot of name-calling from your neighbor, Jeff. Horrific language.
All I can say, Rob, is just remember, Jeff, that God loves you. Thank you very much.
All right, John, bye-bye. Thanks a lot. Great to hear from you. And let's go to the next caller. By the way, you can email us here in the studio at dj@wmnf.org. And let's go to Tina in Tampa. Hi, Tina. You're on. What would you like to say?
Hi. Can I mention something about the World Health Organization and the recent.
Yeah, you know, this part of the show, if you want to bring up anything that's in the news, I welcome it. So what's in the news about the World Health Organization?
I read this last night, and I thought, this is so Trump administration. The World Health Organization was meeting, and it's all these countries, and they were going to adopt a resolution put forth by Ecuador. It was so non-controversial. All it said was that we want to encourage women to breastfeed because that is the healthiest thing for your child. That's like so non-controversial. Well, the United States started strong arming, and this is, I'm paraphrasing what I read in the paper last night. I started strong arming these countries because they get aid from us for much needed aid for, you know, health care. And like Ecuador sponsored the resolution. The United States threatened to withdraw any economic help, unless they dropped the resolution, which they did. So other countries were withdrawing their support, and I don't remember what the final outcome was. I don't think it had been resolved. But you know, like Britain was saying, their health minister was saying, this is so disappointing because the United States is now, you know, bullying countries, holding over their heads the threat of, you know.
Well, Tina, let me read from the New York Times. There's a really good article in the New York Times.
I don't
about
have
this
it in front
and,
of me.
And, so. And the headline from today says, U.S. opposition to breastfeeding resolution stuns world health officials. A resolution to encourage breastfeeding was expected to be approved quickly and easily by the hundreds of government delegates who gathered this spring in Geneva for the United Nations-affiliated World Health Assembly. Based on decades of research, the resolution says that mother's milk is healthiest for children and countries. Countries should strive to limit the inaccurate or misleading marketing of breast milk substitutes. And then the U.S. delegation, embracing the interests of infant formula manufacturers, upended the deliberations. American officials sought to water down the resolution by removing language that called on governments to protect, promote, and support breastfeeding, and another passage that called on policymakers to restrict the promotion of food products that many experts say can have deleterious effects on young children. So the U.S. took the side of infant formula producers against mom's milk.
You know, this kind of thing kills the credibility of this country. I mean, to engage in that kind of thing over breastfeeding, I mean, everybody knows that, that's healthier. Not every woman can do it, but to put yourself in and say, well, you know, let's support these countries, you know, and do so by bullying and threatening to withhold, you know, support, It's like this country, Trump is doing things that are making this country lose so much credibility. And it's even with things like this. I mean, it's bad enough, you know, taking, you know, separating children from, you know, immigrants. Now, one can argue whether we need immigration reform or not and how to go about that. But I think, you know, most every reasonable person would say, you know, don't take the children away. You're hurting the children. But it's this, it's that, it's everything on the world stage and in this country. I cannot fathom how anybody could continue support for him. I mean,
all right. Well, Tina, we're just about to bring on somebody who supports President Trump 100%. So,
okay. Let's hear it.
All right. So let's go to Jeff in Newport Richey, who's been emailing us a bunch of times this morning, calling John a bunch of names earlier. Jeff, you're on WMNF. What would you like to say?
I'd just like to ask Rob how what Sean Hannity does is any different from what Rachel Maddow does or Chris Hayes or Joe Scarborough. I could go on for 15 minutes and list names of.
Well, I think the difference. The difference is that Sean Hannity campaigned for a candidate last week in Florida for a candidate for Congress, and that Chris Hayes and all those people you mentioned, Joe Scarborough, don't campaign for candidates. And when they make a mistake, they offer a correction.
Rob said that he doesn't understand how Sean can say he's fair and balanced and pick a candidate. Well, it seems like everybody on the left picked the candidate, and somehow that's not fair and balanced. The hypocrisy is possible.
Well, I cannot think of a time where Rachel Maddow campaigned, went out, and gave a speech for Hillary Clinton or for Bernie Sanders. I can't think of a time where Chris Hayes or Joe Scarborough gave a speech for anybody running for Congress or for U.S. Senate or for governor. Can you give me an example of when they went out and campaigned?
No, they don't have to go out. They sit in the studio and do it. They do the exact same thing. Except they do it in the studio.
Well, is there a difference? Is there a difference between pointing out the problems with a candidate's candidacy? Is that campaigning for a candidate, or is that saying, America, look out, here's the reasons why we think this person doesn't deserve to be elected?
No, I'm talking about when they support someone, not when they oppose.
Well, I did not watch that much Chris Hayes or Rachel Maddow, but I can tell you the times that I watched, they didn't urge people to go out and vote for Hillary Clinton. In fact, I the times that I watched Chris Hayes, I thought he was leaning towards Bernie Sanders and was kind of upset that Bernie Sanders didn't get the endorsement.
Yeah, but Rob, you change the things that I say to fit your narrative, okay?
You're saying here's Hannity telling people to vote for President Trump, telling people to vote for Ron DeSantis. I can't think of a time. Now, admittedly, I didn't watch every minute of anybody on CNN or MSNBC who's paid to be a host telling you to go out and vote for a candidate. Can you?
I called in to have you talk over me and not let me.
No. I want you to answer the question. Did Chris Hayes or did Rachel Maddow, I'm not a big fan of MSNBC, but did they tell you to go out and vote for a candidate?
I didn't say they said to go out and vote for a candidate.
Well, that's what Hannity does. Hannity tells people who to vote for.
He supports the candidate.
Well, he tells people to vote for Ron DeSantis. So when did Chris Hayes, I think we're talking around in circles, Chris Hayes never did that. Rachel Maddow never did that. And even though you won't admit it, that's the truth. That's the objective truth. So there's a difference between Hannity going out and campaigning for Ron DeSantis and Rachel Maddow saying, here's what I see as the problems are with the Donald Trump candidacy.
You're repeating yourself. You're talking in circles, Rob.
No, I think you're not answering the question.
Well, I learned that from Rob Rosenstein.
Okay, well, so just answer the question, Jeff.
Have they ever?
They have never.
You can't prove a negative, Rob. That all the time.
Jeff, you can never. The sound bites are all out there. If Chris Hayes ever told you to go out and vote for Hillary Clinton, if you've got that sound bite, bring it to me, and I'll play it.
Okay, so at least you've answered the question. The difference between what Sean Hannity does and what the liberal commentators do is Sean Hannity has the guts to go out in public where he could possibly get shot by somebody who asked are those Democrats or Republicans.
Are you saying that Sean Hannity came without security? Are you saying that he came to Tampa without security?
You want to go there? Hey, didn't Jamie Hogwash have armed security when he went to New York City? Come on, liberalism is pathological in
and well, you've used all sorts of names in your emails too. I won't read them. But David Hogg goes. David Hogg has been. David Hogg has been threatened. All right, Jeff. I know you're upset, but David Hogg has been threatened with death. Okay, David Hogg is a 18-year-old kid who some big bad guy with a gun thinks is dangerous to the guy with the gun. So he's had death threats. So, okay, I'll give it to him. He should have a security person. Sean Hannity had a security person when he was in Tampa. You know, so it's just the way it is.
Brilliant. Yeah, he's against guns, but he wants armed guard.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if David Hogg had an armed guard. Maybe he did, maybe he didn't. But who are these big, brave guys that think that they should call in or email or post on social media death threats against David Hogg? I mean, it's not the liberals doing that, Jeff.
Try to make us real law-abiding citizens look bad. That's
every major shooting the last few, every major mass shooting the last few years has been done by a law-abiding citizen. You know, we don't know when you guys are going to turn bad.
Cruz should have been in jail except for Obama's promise program.
You know, you can make all sorts of excuses. The guy in Las Vegas was a law-abiding citizen, got that arsenal legally, and yet was able to kill, 70 people. That's a law-abiding citizen there in Las Vegas.
No, it's not. If he's doing a mass shooting, he's not a law.
All right, but he got every one of those guns legally, and then something in him snapped. But up to the point that he got that arsenal, he was legal. He was a law-abiding citizen. But we don't know, as folks who are concerned about gun violence, apparently you're not, as folks who are concerned about gun violence, we don't know when somebody like you gets really angry and snaps.
Now, if you want guns banned, then you really have arms.
All right, Jeff, we can't hear you. You must be using a substandard
right,
phone.
Right, this is where you hang up.
No, I can't. Ask our listeners if they could hear you.
Hey, can you guys hear me? Oh, you're right, Rob. Something's wrong. I can't hear the man.
All right, if listeners can hear you clearly, I'm going to have them report, okay?
All right, Rob. Thanks.
All right, Jeff, thanks a lot. Thanks a lot. Great to hear from you. And let's go to Miles in Sarasota. Miles, you're on. What would you like to say?
Oh, my God, what an idiot. Oh, my God. We're in trouble, Rob. I hate to say that, but if they took all the time they spent going after the left, okay, you know, I'm pretty in the center, you know. I'm a Democrat by registration, but if these guys took all this time, Handy, all these guys took the time to look towards the future a little bit, they wouldn't be attacking as much. It's ridiculous, okay? They're so insecure, it's incredible. And I think that's a lot of it, really, you know. It's my opinion, but they go on and on like this guy, you know. No proof at all, but just keep throwing it out there, you know. And it's pretty bad, you know.
Yeah, you know, I think we got to calm things down. I mean, our friend Jeff in Newport Richey let out a stream of angry words for liberals, and I'm not going to read them to encourage them. But I think what we've got to do is calm things down, and look for the truth, and look for solid information.
Well, I'll tell you right now, these guys are in for a rude awakening. I'll tell you right now, they keep like Limbaugh and all these guys. They keep hammering the left. The left can get together, and they'll be out of office. They better watch their step, and they know that, okay? Because this is stupid. It's dumb.
All right, Miles, thanks a lot. Thanks.
Okay, buddy.
All right, great to hear from you. Suzanne writes this regarding breastfeeding. Suzanne writes, Nestle's, that's the reason. Nestle's makes the formula, and 20 years ago, they were pushing it on women in third world countries. Nestle's has a lot of American backers. Yeah, I can remember a group of Catholic nuns who were boycotting Nestle's because they were encouraging women in developing nations to get hooked on infant formula. That was a big deal, as Suzanne says, 20 years ago. David writes this, I was surprised that the Trump administration is pushing that infant formula garbage over breast milk. It proves that Trump is a whore for corporate interests. Tom Steyer is right, impeach Trump now. So there's David who's angry on the left. And then here's an email from 813. It says, Jeff is a fool. Hannity has a direct line to Trump. I'm tired of Hannity's inanities, writes 813. And then somebody also from the 813, another anonymous person from the 813 area code says this, how come only 27% of the country trusts the mainstream media, writes 813. Thank you for that. And here's another anonymous from, these are all different people from the 813 area code who aren't signing their names. Another person says, Keith Olbermann got fired from MSNBC because he mentioned giving money to a candidate. Well, if you've got, if you want to comment about anything you've heard here for the last hour, you can call us up at 813-238-8001. Record your comment on extension 115. We'll play your comments back tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock. We'll be talking tomorrow about President Trump's nomination to the U.S. Supreme Court. That's the topic, too, coming up in the next hour with Sean Kinnan. This is WMNF Tampa-St. Petersburg. Here's the news.